and welcome to Acts of the Blood God, independent RPG podcast. We are so happy to be here. I am Nadia Oxford. I am hosting today, so hang on to your butts. We've also got my delicious, lovely co-host, Eric Van Allen.
Delicious? That's okay. Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm not like scented or anything at the moment, but maybe I taste all right.
We have pine-scented Eric, and we also have another scented guest. We have Ash Paulson. What scent are you?
I regret to inform you that I didn't hang on in time. My butt's already gone, so I didn't hang on to my butts in time. My scent, I don't know. I guess I have a bunch of Mega Man figurines near me, so whatever scent Mega Man is, that's
blueberry.
The scent. Blueberry,
oil.
Sure. Blueberry oil scented, yeah.
Is Ash, is when Mega you Man... said like you didn't hang on to your butt, I was just thinking of that tweet that went around where like, oh, they nerfed Wario's ass in Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
And Wario says, they took my ass, I can't shit.
I
have a question, since we have Mega Man people on the pod.
Oh, you do?
What does Mega Man run on?
Solar energy, as far as I know.
Yeah, solar energy. Yeah.
Proto Man, his brother, runs on nuclear energy. He can go off at any moment. That's why he's a loner.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That I understand. Nuclear makes sense to me. But I was going to say, like, if he's like USB powered or he needs oil or something.
I mean, at the very least,
a lot of questions.
The Megabuster is solar powered. So I assume he in general is solar powered.
Oh, I didn't know the Megabuster was solar powered. That's
yeah. The solar bullets that he's firing from his
solar lemons. Yeah.
The solar lemons. Yeah.
Lemons.
When Dr. Light built Protoman, something went wrong with his power source and Protoman took off and Protoman nearly shut down. But Wily saved him and gave him a nuclear power source that was kind of flawed. So he was indebted to Wily for a while. Then he said, fuck this, after I think the Kalinka incident. And now he's just he does loner junk in the woods.
Yeah. Loner junk. Yeah.
Any other questions, sir?
When they come up.
We need to have a whole episode just about answering Mega Man lore questions. I'd be so down for that.
I would love to, maybe this will be a side quest option in our future vote, who's to say, but just I show up with a list of things that I as somebody who does not play Mega Man, just want to know about Mega Man. Like,
well, first we need to fix that.
Dr. Light somebody's dad? Like, he gives fatherly, like, energy.
He's Mega Man's dad.
He's Mega Man's dad.
But not like, in the traditional sense. Like, he did not...
In Battle Network, here's actually a funny thing about Mega Man lore, and I'll get into very briefly here. It's theorized that the world... you have a good world when Dr. Light fucks, and when he doesn't fuck, you have a world where he has children that he builds into robots, that and it all goes wrong. But in the Battle Network universe, he is the father of the main character's father. He's a grandfather of the main character, Lan Hikari. So, he fucks.
That's
and therefore,
crazy.
Everyone's safe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mega Man's not a real boy, right? He's not a real boy.
No, he is tin.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's like the Mega Man universe's Ocarina of Time moment where, whether Dr. Light fucks or not, that's like the Ocarina of Time split moment into
timeline split.
Classic or Battle Network, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we can resume on the Proto Man universe. Holy shit.
we can go back to RPGs now.
Now, in the Proto Man universe, you have Emily. Anyway, this episode is not going to be about Mega Man and Dr. Light fucking, unfortunately. It's going to be about the Switch 2. We're looking back at our little friend now who is, 6 months old, would you say?
Yeah, a little bit more, I guess, at this point.
And I guess we're just talking about, like, is it worth it in the context of an RPG machine? And I guess we'll get straight into this. Actually, I should probably do some housekeeping. We actually just got our new game club vote, which is .hack. I think.
.hack IMOC one. I'm double checking that to make sure. I don't think it was GU because I think GU
was
trailing pretty far.
I think that was the last one.
I'm double checking. Wow. Okay. Yeah. So the winner of this Pantheon vote, which was about CyberConnect specifically, it was an anniversary celebration of CyberConnect 2. I'll go from bottom to top. The fourth place was .hack GU Last Recode. Then Asura's Wrath, which is out to a pretty strong head start, pulled back. Fuga was doing pretty well, but it got beat by .hack IMOC, which is four games. However, my understanding, because I had Victor explain to me why it was okay for us to have four games for Pantheon. To be clear, Victor did not come up with this idea. I came up with this idea, but Victor came up with the idea to have four .hack games in one. So blame me for the good things and Victor for the bad things. It's my understanding is that there are four games, but they share the same setting. They all take place in the same world. They're kind of sequential. So it's kind of an MMO in that way. So it makes sense. Mm-hmm. And also they are about the size of a quarter of a game. They're not long.
Yeah, they're not like all 60 hours or anything like that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Hack Infection is like maybe a 15-hour game, something like that. I can look it up on how long to beat, but it should be too bad.
I was kind of looking forward to Fuga Melodies of Steel. I really wanted the furries shoving children into cannons, but maybe next time. I think it'll show up in another Pantheon mode.
I really wanted Asura's Wrath.
Let's do a furry Pantheon.
What a great idea.
A furry RPG Pantheon. Yeah. You heard it here folks.
Do we have enough furry RPGs to do that?
Oh, we can find some. Load the baby cannon, says Mike versus the World.
Why did you reply that to, is a healer a therapist? Okay, we need to get back on track.
Okay, yeah,
our new Pantheon game, Dot Hack IMOQ, which is the four sequential PS2 Dot Hack games. That will be our next Pantheon that will be airing in April.
Right, so we got that. Our side quest for 3DS RPG drafts that was published recently. That was a fun episode. Were you on that one, Eric? Episode.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
I was laughing at Victor saying that yours was made for people who eat glue.
He didn't say it like that. He just said it's for kindergartners.
Man, it's a good thing I wasn't there for that because I just would have been gushing about Bravely Second the whole time. I love that game to death.
The Bravely games did not get drafted at all.
What?
Yeah. Big upset.
That hurts my soul.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we needed you there for the Bravely part.
Yeah.
We also have merch. If you are a Star of Destiny, as in I am looking at you right now in our chat, you get 20% off. And I'm telling you right now, that hoodie is really good for those days when your landlord screws you on the heat and needs something to kind of slink around in and like a hermit crab. So buy merch, support us. It's great art. And we also have the newsletter if you are at a $5 or above subscription, which you are if you are, again, a Star of Destiny. Hi, how are you? What did I write about last week? Oh, right. I kind of wrote about it was a very strange newsletter where I wrote about the correlation in my head between playing Dragon Quest III on a really crappy-ass emulator, on a really crappy-ass computer, but having a great time of it because it was my first time playing Dragon Quest III since I was a kid. I was kind of like fell in love with it. And, you know, I could never buy it. I could never find it after I rented it. So I just kind of played it again for the first time on this 486. And it worked so well for me, even though it ran like crap. And there was no sound. So I kind of supplemented that by listening to music as I played. And back then we had an album in Canada called Big Shiny Tunes 3, which it's kind of like now. It's kind of like Now This Is What I Call Music, except we have something like that too. It's called Now, and the ad was Get It Right Now. Mm-hmm. So the song I associated most with playing through that session was Space Lord by Monster Magnet. And just earlier in the week, I had heard Space Lord, and immediately I started thinking of Dragon Quest III, and I'm like, why am I linking those two in my head? So I went back in my memories, and I'm like, oh, okay. And yeah, I think I have a strange memory bank, but that was a really fun newsletter to write. I always try to write fun things, like in this horrible world of AI slop and terrible people writing terrible things.
Yeah.
Why not come to my bosom and I will teach you, I will write all about the nostalgia and the crazy things. But anyway, let's get to our main topic. As I said, the Switch 2, it is 6 months old. Is it worth it? Especially in the content. Well, first of all, let's talk about is it worth it, period. I bought a Switch 2 at launch. I like it. I love it, actually. I played a lot and not only because it has some great upgrades for old Switch games, but also I think Donkey Kong Bonanza, I just had a great freaking time with that game. Just smashing the shit out of everything. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's how I roll. I smash. Same. Every day.
I smash as well. And I smash with DK. No, that was my second favorite game of last year. So I would say for DK Bonanza alone, I would say it has been worth it. But no, I've really been enjoying my Switch 2. No notes really. I love the magnetic Joy-Cons. I guess my one note would be the refresh rate on the screen in handheld mode isn't great, but I mostly play in TV mode anyway. So yeah, you got the Switch 1 library, which is already incredible. Yeah. And then you got the new stuff you know, DK Bonanza, Mario Kart World, Metroid Prime 4, which I know there's a lot of toxic discourse out there about that game. I liked it personally. Kirby Air Riders. Yeah.
But I haven't played it.
And also, I put like 70 hours into Hyrule Warriors Age of Imprisonment.
Right?
Excellent
that
game.
That was a great game. That was one of my favorites last year. And by the way, shout out to Spooky Man VR. Sorry, we forgot to do our Star Wars Destiny shout out. Sorry, man.
But I was not prepared for how hard that game story would hit me, even knowing what happens in Tears of the Kingdom. I went in like, I know what happens in Tears of the Kingdom. It's a prequel. This is going to like surprise me. And then it surprised me. I'm like, why am I feeling all the feels? And all I need to say is Calamo. Like, oh,
I love
man. Yeah.
I think he's voiced by ProZiD, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, I didn't know
he
that.
Does such
okay.
a great job. Cause definitely like a really fun, cool character. And I know what you mean by that ending. Like, I'm glad that it didn't wuss out. Cause that was my biggest fears with after Hyrule Age of Calamity. Like, I don't want an alternate universe. I want everyone to die. So here, this is really, and also I had been wondering what Zelda was up to during the War of Imprisonment,
same.
Which of course, being a fan of Link to the Past, I'm always interested in what went on there. I will say that I found that the main story, like, didn't really go exactly where I wanted it to, but the supplementary characters and their stories, like that was a lot of fun. So I got used to that and had a great time. There were some great characters in that, like the Gerudo.
Artie and Kia and Rafika. Yeah, no, I really liked all the sages and I personally, I don't know. I spent a lot of time with Switch 2 last year. There's some stuff coming down, you know, the pike this year that I'm really looking forward to. I think the Switch 2 has been pretty strong so far. Not perfect, but pretty strong.
How about you, Eric? Do you have a Switch 2?
Yeah, I have a Switch 2. I find it to be an interesting device, let's put it that way. I do use it a lot. But I think I use it as much, as often, and in the same ways that I use my Switch 1. And so I think the question for me becomes, like, have I felt like the Switch 2 has been a meaningful upgrade for me from my Switch 1? And I think it'll probably ultimately come back to whether you're willing to spend $500 on it or not, right? Because that's kind of still where it's at. It's an expensive machine. But I do think if I was only going to have one gaming console, like not counting my PC, if I can only pick one device to play games on, it's my PC every time. But if I can only have one console, it's still the Switch every time, just because the factor works for me. I travel a lot. I like to play on my couch a lot, you know. I like to sit and have Poe snuggle up next to me, and I play either handheld with something on the TV, or I can plug it into the TV and play on the big screen. It just works that way. But I don't know that it's tricky. I feel like the most I've felt from the Switch 2 has been just better versions of things that I was playing already on the Switch 1. You know, I played a few Switch 2 games or games on Switch 2 as they have rolled out. I think Octopath Traveler Zero is probably the thing I've spent the most time on since I got my Switch 2. And I like having the sort of, you know, horsepower to make those games run really well, because Octopath Traveler 1, at least from what I remember, was sometimes a little choppy. And I mean, Traveler Zero can get a little choppy at times too, but it runs better. A lot of other things run way better, to the point that I get really surprised by how well they run on the Switch 2. But I think I'm just having trouble thinking of stuff that has really stuck with me that I've played on the Switch 2 in terms of like the format, in terms of the place that I'm playing it. I think a lot of the games are going to be coming out this year that are really going to like solidify, hey, this is the platform. I played Bonanza. I had a good time with Bonanza, but it didn't make my GOTY list or anything. And same with Age of Imprisonment. I was like, it's fine. It's not the best Musou that came out last year, but I had an okay time with it. And I'm really kind of maybe like lukewarm on the Switch 2, at least in terms of what kind of exclusive options it's bringing for the platform versus having a Switch 1.
That's understandable. I was just thinking about, the Switch 2 doesn't have a whole lot of Switch 2 RPG exclusives, at least not now. Cyberpunk, the complete edition or whatever you want to call it, was that? I'm sure that must have been Switch 2 exclusive, right?
Yes, I think so.
It had to have been.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Because it's like, what a nightmare that that cyber...
It's not on the Switch 1.
No. Yeah, there's no way. Yeah, yeah.
So that apparently is very good. What's funny is I have it, but I haven't played it because I don't know if you remember, but during Black Friday, there was a huge fuck up with the pricing. And the enhanced edition or whatever was like $20.
Yeah.
I grabbed that. Yeah. And that's like has the expansion. It has everything. Supposedly it runs pretty well. And mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Cyberpunk. When we played it last year for our Pantheon. So I will at some point, as I understand it, there's a cross save. So I will at some point transfer my save and do all that. But to me, I feel like even the bump ups in performance, which, you know, some of them are really good and are free or cheap. That makes it worth it for me, especially because I never liked to play the Switch original on the big TV. I just felt like the performance, I don't know, it just worked. Everything just looks so much better on handheld for me. But I feel like with the Switch 2, it really does have that horsepower to make things look pretty dang good on the big screen and also pretty dang good on handheld, even though handheld, the screen being kind of ghosty is a big disappointment. And I'm sure we'll get an OLED at some point.
Yeah.
One of the things we have to consider when we're talking about the Switch 2 or anything in general if with electronics is that we live in a really weird landscape right now. The pricing for the Switch 2 is really high, but so is the pricing for everything else. I don't know how much an OLED version coming out would be, but I know it would be more expensive and or likely more expensive. And I just, unlike the original Switch, I can't buy it on a whim. The way I kind of collected like the Switch Lite, the Switch OLED, all of that. Maybe that'll change. Maybe miracles will happen. Who knows?
Who knows? But, yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing with the Switch 2 right now is just that it could use some more games. You know, it's been about 6 months, but I think the launch cadence kind of slowed after mm-hmm. Bonanza and Mario Kart came out. And, you know, Nintendo has a lineup. They have games coming out for it. And some of them are pretty big for us on the RPG front. But yeah, Metroid Prime 4 as well.
Well, it's
and
funny
Age of Imprisonment. I feel like it was more spread out, maybe. That's why I feel this way, is that I remember Switch 1 launch year had some really incredible stuff right out the gate. I mean,
yeah,
Breath of the Wild is obviously the one to point to, but you have things like Splatoon was also in that year, and Mario Kart also was in that year, if I remember correctly. And it feels like we've had hits, but stuff that was kind of like within the realm of expectations, stuff we'd already seen before, stuff that wasn't exactly, I think, outside Bonanza, doing anything that we really wouldn't expect from the Switch. And maybe that's the thing that's really hitting me, is that the Switch 2 feels like more of a good thing, which is always a good thing. I'm never going to say it's not a good thing. It just doesn't surprise in the way that the Switch 1 did. And maybe that's why mm-hmm. I feel differently about it.
Well, the Switch itself as a concept was much fresher. I mean, it was fresh and new and different. The Switch 2 very much is iterative. It's a sequel to the original Switch. So I think, you know, you can only really, it's kind of like Tears of the Kingdom compared to Breath of the Wild. Tears of the Kingdom, in my opinion, is the better game, but it doesn't have that holy crap factor that Breath of the Wild did,
because
Breath of the Wild was groundbreaking. The Switch was groundbreaking. The Switch 2 is just more and better of that same mm-hmm. groundbreaking mm-hmm. thing, but it's no longer groundbreaking because we've seen what the Switch does already, right?
Yeah.
There's
also, in terms of exclusives, of course, the Switch 2 has Pokemon, which Pokopia, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call it.
Well, yeah, so Pokopia is coming out later this
March.
Year. And then we have, was it Legends Z through A recently
ZA came out?
Yeah.
September, I think.
Yeah.
October.
And ZA, I know it has its shooters out there. It has people that will go to bat for it.
Yeah, I know a few.
I kind of dabbled in it and didn't enjoy it as much as Arceus. I think just because I kind of hit a point with it where I was like, I don't think they give you enough reason to want to go do the catching thing. And I think the way they arranged the wild zones didn't hit for me the way that Arceus had the sort of like expedition feel to it and stuff like that. Mm. Which is a very minor nitpick, but when you have to play a billion games all the time, you get really nitpicky about the reasons why you put games
down. Zoo Batman says, "Oh, hi, Zoo Batman. Good to see you again. I love ZA more than Arceus."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got its shooters. I do think that we're this year. I mean, the big obvious question mark is, do we get a Gen 10 this year?
Right.
And mm-hmm. the timing seems like it would be right, but is Game Freak forging ahead with what you would expect from the timeline, or do we think that it's going to get delayed?
I think that after Ruby, not Ruby and Sapphire, after what was the one that came out, that just came out? Why am I blanking on it?
Scarlet and Violet.
Yeah, I think after Scarlet and Violet, that whole fiasco, they might be slowing things down and doing things more carefully, especially maybe they have to relearn how to do things. Like, they had some problems with the like really programming for the Switch, didn't they? They just never really quite got the hang of it until towards the end. I mean, I have to say one of the best experiences I've had with the Switch 2 was just going back and playing Scarlet and Violet.
Right.
At a frame rate that actually worked. And I had a great time. I should have cited it on my games of the year, but didn't get a chance to. Still loved it. And if it's a little disappointing that more people didn't like ZA, because I thought maybe that was just a sign that they were heading in the right direction. They just didn't really have the horsepower behind it. But who knows? I have trust in Game Freak.
I actually think that they're not going to slow down the release cadence for Pokemon, only because, and I have no hate for Game Freak, but one of the things they're not known for is, you know, taking full advantage of the hardware they're working on. And I kind of think they're going to keep just churning them out. And I say churning, I mean, I actually really like Scarlet and Violet despite the performance issues. I played it on Switch 1 and was able to finish it and enjoy it despite the egregious visual and performance issues. But, you know, Game Freak just are not known for taking full advantage visually and performance-wise of the hardware they're working on. So I don't think they're going to slow down for that reason. I think they're going to keep just pushing on with Gen 10 and probably try to get it out sooner rather than later. But they also have experience with the Switch 2 now because of the Scarlet and Violet updates. So they know, you know, they know a bit more about the hardware they're working on in terms of Switch 2. So I wouldn't expect Gen 10 to have the same kind of egregious visual and performance issues that Scarlet and Violet had when it launched.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And either way, go ahead, Eric.
I was just going to say, and Pokemon's also a product. Like, that's the thing. It's sure like Pokemon's not just a video game. Pokemon is a transmedia product that spans multiple different mediums that get sold and packaged in many different places. Like, it is a thing that is a hot commodity for the Pokemon company, you know, outside of just Nintendo. I think, didn't Poképark Kanto just open up, if I remember right?
I was
seeing some news stories this week about people like going to visit it and stuff like that. I do think we probably get a Gen 10 this year. I would hope it is learned that the Game Freak has learned, or at least has a little bit more horsepower to work with. It does seem like from the Scarvi updates that they're at least going to have like a more stable technical foundation to work from. I like Scarvi as a story game, as an actual like Pokemon game. I thought it had a good story. Yeah,
Area Zero is peak Pokemon.
Area Zero is so much fun.
Yeah,
playing that was legitimately like I felt like I was playing the future of Pokemon when I was playing that. I was like, this is it. They figured it out. Like, this is how Pokemon moves forward. I don't know if the next game feels like that at all. Probably won't. Probably feel a lot like the rest of Scarvi, but one can hope.
It was just such a good conclusion to the story. I love Arvin. I think he's such an interesting character, and his background, when you think about it, was kind of brutal for a Pokemon game.
It was. Yeah.
Where it's like, I don't want to spoil anything, but not all professors are nice. Not all professors love their children. Not all professors even care that they have children.
Right.
I do want to note, though, we're talking a lot about first parties, and I think that is the thing to talk about when you talk about the Switch up front, is it's a Nintendo console. Usually when you buy a Switch, you are buying it for Nintendo games first and foremost, or rather, like, if you have a Switch, you're going to play Nintendo games. It's the place where you get them. They're made for them. They're usually run well on them. You're pretty set. The thing with the Switch, too, that I think has been a really big benefit for the console as a whole, and why I'm still pretty, like, I'm not cold on it. I still enjoy mine a lot. I still use mine a lot. It's the third party bar feels way higher, because I mean, Switch 1, notorious, you know, after like year one, year two, you'd get a port of a game and it might run a lower frame rate, lower resolution, stuff like that. It would, you know, and by the end of the Switch's lifespan, we were starting to see stuff that was like, well, what if we cloud things? What if we do stuff like that?
Sure. Yeah.
And the Switch 2 right out the gate has had, I think, both in the broad realm and in the RPG realm, a lot of really good ports, a lot of really good third-party games, as has been pointed out in the Stars chat. FF7 Remake was running very, very well, like very promisingly. Trails in the Sky runs very well on it. Fantasy Life I, honestly, is like a great game on the Switch. It's it's been a bit of a third party powerhouse in that way, and in a stronger way, I think, than the Switch 1 seemed. I think Switch 1 definitely had its games, its third party games, but they were almost third party exclusives, stuff that came over that felt like it had to be made for the platform. Where yeah. Switch 2 feels a little bit more broad reaching because of the power it has behind it.
Yeah, you don't feel the power gap quite as much as you did with the Switch 1.
Yeah.
Yeah, again, Cyberpunk was done really well, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, Witcher was really good on Switch 1. So whoever's been doing that with in partnership with CD Projekt has been figuring that stuff out.
Yeah, it really took it was really a matter of having a company that knew how to port for the Switch and cared enough to kind of really take care with it and scale it down to the best of their abilities in a way that doesn't really compromise gameplay or graphics. So that takes work and like, money.
Even like kind of, you know, smaller games you wouldn't think about as readily are getting Switch 2 updates, like the Romancing Saga 2 remake,
right.
Revenge of the Seven. That got a Switch 2 update. You know, even at launch, we got Bravely Default HD. Like, yeah. I mean, right, kind of right out of the, and that's alongside Cyberpunk, like kind of right out of the gate. The Switch 2 came out swinging with some pretty heavy hitters for RPGs.
Yeah. And I argued in one of my newsletters that Mario Kart World is an RPG because it kind of had an exploration-based...
Right.
I will say that I was expecting more Mario Kart content by now. I don't know where the hell that is.
Yeah, I was too. Yeah.
Nintendo always just keeps you guessing in a way that's so frustrating. But
right.
kind of fun because nobody does that anymore. Everything gets leaked beforehand. As we record this, there's rumors about a Nintendo Direct next week. So Nate the Hate is... giving us that hate and prophecy, I suppose.
And he's saying it's a partner showcase, I believe, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that
I think
part.
He's saying it's a partner showcase, if I'm not mistaken.
In other words, third party.
Yeah, which maybe this is where we get the announcement of Rebirth on Switch. I mean, we know it's coming, so yeah. It's just a matter of time. And that's what I'm really excited to see, because we know now, you know, Remake looks shockingly and runs shockingly well on Switch 2. Like, it really looks good. I played the demo and I'm like, holy crap. Like, I played Remake on PS4 and I'm like, this feels pretty similar. And I you know, Rebirth is obviously so much bigger in scope. I'm so curious to see how Square makes that work on Switch 2, because that is a game that is infinitely bigger in scope than Remake was.
For sure.
I want my standalone Queen's Blood.
Yeah.
I want a way to have like the Pokemon trading card game for a Game Boy original, but like for Queen's Blood specifically. Uh-huh. Just cut out all the other crap. Get all that out of there. We don't need that. Just let me go walk through. This is maybe like selfish of me in a way, and maybe only I would enjoy this. Please tell me in the comments if that's true. I want a game that is a scale of game that is like a Skyrim, like a Breath of the Wild, like something that big, but where the primary thing that you are doing is playing a card game and getting packs and going to different towns and taking down the local talent. Like give me the like Magic the Gathering card game that is not actually about the lore of Magic, but you're just going to different cities. Give me like a Yakuza where you're kind of walking through like a Kamurocho and you can buy stuff, and then maybe you have to like manage some of like your survival elements. Give it like some Shenmue type stuff in there, and then you're playing card games. And give me that, where like cut out combat, get rid of fighting. The way I fight people is with my deck and I can rip booster packs, but then I have to go do a job to get money to buy the booster packs to keep climbing the ranks. That's how we Shenmue this.
Kinda
is
like,
you have to go forklift job to get more booster packs.
No More Heroes, like you gotta take some crappy ass job to keep getting the money.
Desperately want this game.
Maybe there can be fight scenes where you just kind of like throw cards at each other or try to paper cut each other. That'd be fun.
Paper cut each other?
I don't know. Give someone a paper cut with a like card.
Nadia, are you often at board game events just trying to give other people paper cuts? Like, what's happening?
No, I'm not allowed. They have signs on all the doors saying Nadia's not allowed. Snakes and Lattes is like, no Nadias. We can have one, and there's already a Nadia.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... Switch 2 in general, I've been very happy with it. I have been playing most of my RPGs on it. I honestly have not really picked up my Switch since getting my Switch 2, which stands to reason. Although I will say there's one area where I am hesitant, and that is the area of travel. Ironically, I feel like the Switch 2 is too expensive to kind of cart around, even though I did when I went to MagFest, and I never used it, of course, because of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you get a good, nice case for it, it's protected. And I was able to get a nice little case at launch, and I've traveled with it. The main thing is the size. It's just, you know, it's a bit,
it's bigger.
Yeah, it's bigger. So it doesn't quite fit neatly into a bag as much as I'd like, but also I also appreciate the bigger form factor because I have big hands. So I appreciate the bigger form factor.
Big, strong
compared
hands.
To the, you know, the original
meaty
Switch.
Claws.
So, yeah, but I certainly would not travel with it without a case for it. There's no,
no
way.
Yeah,
no
yeah.
way.
Learn from my mistake. I went caseless for the first 3 months.
What?
And there's it's tiny. It's not enough that I would need to replace anything, but there's like a tiny chip on my screen, like almost dead center, but it's like right,
worst.
Right, like slightly north of dead center, and it is so tiny, but you know it's there. It's the little pixel, and I'm just like, damn it.
Yeah.
But I will personally, what I use is the TomTok case, TomToc. It's a very sleek, low profile case that form fits very naturally to the Switch, nice. But still protects it very well. I love it. I think it's great. And I got it because other people recommended it to me and they said they loved it. So if you are looking for a case that is a little bit more form factor, because like that was my problem with the Steam Deck for a long time, was the case it came with was just huge.
Was it like a briefcase?
Honestly, it looked like a handgun case. Like that's like the size that we're talking
that's
about.
That's exactly what it would take to the airport.
That's yeah. kind of the case I have right now. It's a little bit too big. Yeah, it protects it well, but it's a little bit too thick.
Yeah, so TomTok makes really like sleek, low profile ones. There are also like some higher end ones that you can get that almost are like crossbody bags that you can cart around if you want that, if that's something you're interested in. I think the Switch 2 is as big as a portable console should be. I don't know if we go any larger, I think we're losing the vision
losing
of
the
what
point.
Portability is.
Yeah. Right, right. Yeah.
But this is why we have to bring back clamshell design, because that was the answer. Mm-hmm. That was how you get more
really
real
was.
Estate.
Yeah, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
What I did actually is I still have my original Switch case. It's the one that they were selling at the time when the Switch came out. It was like the shape like the Sheikah slate. And it still works. All I really have to do is take off the Joy-Cons, and there's like a little netting in the inside of the case that I just kind of put them in. And yeah, so it works. It's in a pinch, but I think once I have like
it works, I just have to disassemble the console and I want to put it in the case.
Better than leaving the screen out.
True, true. You're right. Yeah, I can't throw stones in this glass house.
Yeah, any other final thoughts on the Switch 2? I will just say that, yeah, maybe it's not as groundbreaking as the Switch, but it is absolutely getting use in my house, and I do not regret my purchase or my deeds.
Same. No, I don't regret it at all. I'm looking forward to year 2 of the Switch 2. I mean, I'm curious to hear what Monolith Soft is up to, if they're going to be working on updates for Xenoblade 1, 2, 3, or X.
They're
working on Xenoblade 4. I just want to know what they're up to, because, you know, I love the Xenoblade series to death, and with the Switch 2's improved horsepower and everything, I want to see what they can do with a native Switch 2 game. Xenoblade 4, native Switch 2, just imagine what they could do.
I am sitting there staring at Xenoblade Chronicles 2 saying, like, I should really replay this because I still want to do the DLC, but I want to replay 2 so I can remember what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, do I bother, or are they going to pull a fast one on me?
Yeah, I know.
Because I know the remake for the original Xenoblade Chronicles is really good.
It is very good, yeah. Mm-hmm. And 3 could use the update. 3 is one of my favorite games of all time. I'd love to see if they could do it.
So good.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
So good.
And I played and finished X last year for the first time because I didn't play it on Wii U. So I played the Definitive Edition, and I want to see that world in 60 FPS, better resolution, because, you know, Monolith Soft create these incredible alien worlds, and
they do.
They're really only hamstrung by the Switch 1's performance and capabilities.
And
I want to see what they can do with Switch 2. Even then, it still looks really good. Yeah.
Like, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 should not look as good as it looks.
No, it shouldn't. Yeah.
But as you said, like, they are the ones teaching Nintendo how to do open world. So I'm really looking forward to what they got cooking.
Honestly, it was funny. Going back and playing Breath of the Wild. I didn't play the whole game again, of course, but I did get the Switch 2 update for Breath of the Wild. And
I'm so tempted.
It was like felt like forbidden magic playing Breath of the Wild at 60 FPS and it looking as amazing as it did. I felt like I was like bootlegging something, but I wasn't. Like, this is official. I felt like I was playing like something on PC that I shouldn't, but I'm like, no, this is an official release, and it looks so amazing. And I'm like, man, how did they get the original game looking as good as it did on Switch 1 and Wii U? Like, it's crazy.
I definitely am tempted to get the upgrade for Tears of the Kingdom, but yeah. I know I'll get sucked into it and I won't come back for a long time, and I can't afford that.
Oh,
right.
Oh, exactly. No, I don't have time. Yeah.
I just have it because I have Switch like online expansion pack or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and same. I think that's the other nice thing. And honestly, like an underrated part of Switch 2 ownership is that expansion pack, because it's a pretty cheap sub, honestly, compared to most other gaming subs out there. And what they give you is actually pretty good.
Like the
DLC access is really nice. The retro game library, if you have the Switch 2 and the expansion pack, is really, really good.
There's a lot of non-released games that are coming out now.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to pay $300 to play Path of Radiance, now you can pay like, I don't know, what is it, like 40, 50 bucks for one year to play Path of Radiance.
Like, yeah. For a family.
And you get like, it's like seven consoles now. And all of them are updated, you know, fairly frequently.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't always get what you want, but when you get what you get is really good for the price. Like,
yeah,
Nintendo's obviously very keen on selling the subscription because they're giving you a lot of stuff for it. And if you're an Animal Crossing fan, it's mandatory practically.
I think it was two years ago now. Like, I think it dropped on the same day as the first day of Summer Game Fest, like 2 years ago. But randomly, Nintendo was like, "Here's a new Game Boy Nintendo Classics update." And it was Mega Man 1 through 5, and I'm like,
yeah.
"Summer Game Fest rules! This is the best announcement of Summer Game Fest." Yeah.
Yeah, but I probably sound colder than I am on my Switch 2. I really use it constantly. It's probably like my second most used console, like gaming device outside of my PC. And it basically is the reason why I barely turn on my PlayStation 5 anymore, because if I have the chance to play a game, I'm going to play it on my PC or on my Switch 2. It's one or the other. And a lot of games, because of how well the ports have been going, I've been erring more towards the side of Switch 2 than I thought I would. You know, I'm kind of bummed that my Trails in the Sky stuff is on PC, because when I travel, I'm like, oh, I really want to be playing Trails in the Sky right now, but it's my save is on PC. And so it is legitimately like a very useful console. I think my question always continues to be like, if you have a Switch 1, like, I think if you don't have a Switch at all, then Switch 2 makes a lot of sense. If you have Switch 1, that's kind of where my wariness is. But I think this is the year where it's going to become a better case for upgrading. It's going to become a better reasoning for somebody who's maybe been on the fence or wants, you know, is like, doesn't want to tank the cost right away. Says, okay, like, this is the time. We're going to have games that I really, really care about. We're going to have stuff that looks really, really interesting. And the Switch 2 is going to feel like a more full-bodied console in the second year. I'm really looking forward to it. We didn't even talk about like Square Enix. Obviously, we talked about Final Fantasy VII Remake, but Adventures of Elliot looks really cool. I'm excited to learn more about that eventually.
I'm so excited for that.
The Millennial Tales.
Koei Tecmo continues to work magic on the Switch.
They're great.
I feel like I was seeing some reports this week that the Dynasty Warriors Origins port is incredibly good on Switch 2. I think Koei Tecmo were one of the secret best companies developing on the Switch 1. I mean, they were working behind the scenes with so many major games to make them run so well. Can't wait to see what Koei Tecmo does with Switch 2 power. So yeah, no, I'm very bullish on the console.
Dragon Quest Builders 3. That's what you need to do.
I mean, that's what Pocopia is.
I know.
Pocopia is the same team, if I remember correctly.
I'm looking forward to that. Because that's just looking great.
You know, and something else that was always one of my favorite things about the Switch 1's library that also applies to Switch 2 is that over the years, it really amassed an extremely diverse library of games from so many different past console generations. And relevant to the RPG discussion, that personally I think alone sells the case for Switch 2 and RPGs, is like, you've got the Grandia collection. You've got the Lunar collection. Like,
you do.
You've got all these amazing Suikoden collection. And that's not even, so you have those, but then you also have like Final Fantasy 1 through 6 Pixel Remaster, 7, 8, 10, 9, like 12. I think so many. And then Dragon Quest 1, 2, 3, 7. Yeah.
At this point, you can play every mainline Final Fantasy up through, like, not counting the MMOs. Sorry, Victor, I did the thing. every Final Fantasy, not counting the MMOs, up through 13. I think 13 is the first one that is not on
13,
the Switch.
15, and that's because, 16 or not. Yeah.
Well, 15 Pocket Edition is on the Switch.
That was the thing they made.
Yeah, hey Square, if you're listening, the hell is up with 13 not getting a port? Come on.
Please. I agree. Thank you. 13. I love 13 personally. And
let's,
I really
want to
get
a Zodiac age going for 13.
Yeah.
I'd play 13, the second one as well. The
13-2.
A 13 collection would go crazy.
I would
That'd
love
be so
to get a 13
fun.
Collection. Yeah. I think more people need to play those games because 13 gets hated on way too much.
It's fun. It's got a great battle theme. It's got a great battle system.
Yeah.
Like 50% of the cast is really enjoyable.
Drew RWX and chat touched on something I want to mention. So they also mentioned Moon and Chrono Cross. There's Moon, the Chrono Cross remaster. The worst thing I can say about the Switch in terms of RPG potential is not something that's even Nintendo's fault. It's a fact that you can't play Chrono Trigger on it. And that's not Nintendo's fault. So but Live Alive, great. Yeah, there's Live Alive remake is also there. So
I still gotta play that.
It's really good.
It's
Team
good.
Asano
it's good.
Does not miss. Like they just really keep winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
God,
that's
Octopath
really like
Zero is so good.
I still gotta play Octopath Zero. I gotta play that. I love
I need to get back to it.
Fantasian Neo Dimension is on the Switch.
Fantasia's
plays very
well
on the Switch.
Yeah.
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 So I think the consensus is that the Switch and Switch 2, like, they just win for RPGs. They continue to win, and they will continue to win as we head into the new year. And that's okay. That's good. I enjoy that news.
Mm-hmm.
Let us move on so that Eric can get to his magic game. If he doesn't get to the magic game on time, they cut him up with the cards.
Right.
They do. They turn me into the cards.
Death by paper cuts.
It's like
Death
that first episode of Yu-Gi-Oh! Where his grandpa gets put into a card. I get put into a card. Yeah.
How much are you worth once you put into a card?
eBay. I'm bulk. I'm common.
2 cents. All right, let's move on to a series of random encounters. All right, so the Primal's Dark Decades Tour Budokan Blu-ray launches March in Japan and April in the West. And I wrote, if you don't think this is the tightest shit, you can get out of my face. The Primals are basically the Final Fantasy 14 band music makers, if you will.
Oh, okay, cool.
And
it's a band of the developers of 14.
Yes, Soken.
Yeah, like Soken and such that then play the music of 14, but in like hardcore like rock. It's awesome.
The SC House Band, as Anthrax Beast puts it. Yeah, that's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah, I have seen the Primals perform live at FanFest, and it was an incredible show. It was just so much fun. And Koji Fox, I once read something where someone said like, man, Koji Fox, he can write, he could localize, he knows Japanese. He can rap. He can write songs. Save some pussy for the rest of us, man. So he's a singer for the band. And it's just like definitely worth watching if you get a chance. That's why I put it on the news. If you like game music,
God,
you like this.
So this isn't the Primals, but in May, the new Square Enix concert tour is coming to L.A. Where they're doing. It's non-Final Fantasy. It's like Chrono Trigger, Xenogears, Live, all the Mana. Yeah. Like they're doing a bunch of different games from their non-Final Fantasy catalog. And I'm like, Chrono Trigger music live? Oh, my God. I am so there. I'm so excited.
Yeah, I would weep. I would
go to one of those for sure.
Oh,
actually,
I can't wait.
We'll talk more about this in the tavern, but I just went to a Distant Worlds concert, and that was
nice. That They're was a so riot. Good. They're so amazing.
They're so good.
Yeah.
I'll get into that afterwards. But I also wrote Trails in the Sky, second chapter, has a gameplay trailer.
Yeah.
I've not watched it. I've been told that there are spoilers in it. I'm trying to stay clean, live a healthy life. Yeah.
Yeah. So how about you? Are you a Trails fan, Ash?
So the only one I played is the only Legend of Heroes game I played was the very original one. And I don't know what it's actually called, like which one it actually is in the saga, but it was The Legend of Heroes on PSP. And I don't know which one that is. I've always wanted to get into Trails. I played the demo of Trails in the Sky first chapter, and I loved everything except the combat. The combat, for some reason, didn't do it for me. And so
The Trails has a very unique combat system. It's actually one of the things I love about it.
And I was a little sad because everything else, I was like, oh, this is so my jam. It's anime as hell. I love the characters and the art style. And the music, I was vibing with it. But the combat just didn't do it for me. So I'm sadly a little bit, I feel like I'm like that person looking in through the windows at Trails fans. I want to be part of it, but I don't quite get it yet.
What I will say for the combat is that it didn't click for me for the longest time. I think even now it's still like where I'm at, which is maybe 20 hours in or so, still feels a little rote at times. Mm-hmm. But where it does start to get interesting is when you get more orbments and you start playing the game of how do I arrange these orbments to get the skills unlocked. Mm-hmm. And then I think it runs into a problem of just like the skills you ultimately get aren't that interesting. It's like, oh, I did my orbment and I figured it out and I feel so smart. And it's like, good job. You get a better fireball. And I'm like, great.
Yeah, right. But they always do like they call out their attacks like anime, like seven leaves, eight slash. Like I love Green. Yeah. Green Schwarzer is one of my favorite characters in the Trails series. Moving right along, there is a Octopath Traveler Zero update that brings improved sound quality and performance improvements, et cetera, et cetera. I did not have a problem with the sound in Octopath Traveler Zero, but apparently some people said it was like muffled or staticky.
I played the demo and I didn't really, Yeah,
I think maybe some of the voice acting maybe was a little bit muffled and that's why they re-recorded it. So
I really want to play Octopath Zero. I'm like, I love 2. I loved Octopath 2 so much. And I played the demo of Zero and it didn't quite click with me for whatever reason, but everyone who's played the full game seems, that's what I've heard. So
like, quickly.
Is it grindy at all or is it pretty easy?
Let's save this for the tavern. Let's save this for the tavern.
Fair.
Yeah, we'll get there in a moment because I have been playing Octopath Zero, so we can talk about that.
All right, cool.
Okay. Concerned Ape gives update on Haunted Chocolatier. I am alive. The game is still in development. That's good to hear.
Nice.
I love Eric Barone. Just keep doing what you're doing.
I think he was addressing a conspiracy theory that Haunted Chocolatier was like canceled and was going to be turned into an update for Stardew Valley. And he's like, no, that's not what's happening. Just give me time.
He told us.
Let me cook.
Chill.
Yeah.
Chill.
I think he told us a while back that basically everything to do with Stardew Valley, like he's still overseeing it, but a lot of it's in the hands of other people. Whereas he's just kind of focusing more on Haunted Chocolatier, I would think. But he's fine. Mm-hmm. The reason we have Stardew Valley and the reason why it's so good is because Eric has been working on his own time, doing his own thing. And if we trust the process, we get good things sometimes. Trust the process, man. you wrote something here, I'm assuming, Eric, Bethesda veteran. Oh, let's get into this. Why don't you go ahead, Eric?
Bethesda veteran Bruce Naismith gives his take on Morrowind because he was asked about, the possibility of a Morrowind remaster or remake a la Oblivion. Here's the quote. The other thing I would say is go back and play Morrowind and tell me that's the game you want to play again. We all have these fond memories of things that were pivotal moments in our gaming fantasy histories that we absolutely... I assume that's supposed to be we absolutely love. It says absolutely move. This was copy-pasted from the interview, so I don't know if that was a typo. But
probably is.
But you go back and play a 20-year-old game, and you will cringe.
Not really.
Okay.
I cannot think of a more antithetical statement to what this podcast is than cringing because a game is old.
That has like early PlayStation 1 era, like Sony's like 3D or 2D games are dumb vibes. Right. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I as someone who has been playing old games as content for this podcast for quite a while, especially games that I didn't play the first time around, I think there might be an element of playing a game that you played a long time ago and then seeing it in a new light as you have just, technology has shifted. Maybe there's an element of that, but games like Chrono Trigger, games like Final Fantasy VI, they hold up. Like Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines holds up. I go back and play that game at least once a year, and it's still every year I am baffled by how well it holds up compared to modern games. And it's not even, I read this a little cynically as well, because I think the thing that we have to like smother with a pillow in our minds is the idea that if he had gone out there and said like, oh, this wouldn't market as well, it'd be difficult. We have difficulty hitting our delta vectors and stuff like that. Like, okay, I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's the thing we have to smother with a pillow, because that's none of that matters at the end of the day. Like, people are still going to be playing Morrowind and talking about Morrowind in the next 10 years, 20 years from now. It's a pivotal game. It was remembered well. It will be remembered well. And I think people have a pretty high tolerance for playing something that looks old. I mean, a lot of major games in the last couple of years that were like surprises, quote unquote, were games that people thought like, oh, would this get big? And then they got huge. Look at things like Iron Lung. Look at things like Signalis. Look at things like Mouthwashing, which became indie horror hits, even though they look like PS1 games because they had something genuinely interesting to say and communicate. Yeah, Undertale, great example. Yeah. Even I would say, and this might be a little bit bold, but Clair Obscur has moments of looking incredible, but it's definitely not the visual fidelity of a Final Fantasy 16.
Sure.
It didn't need to be to do what it had to do. And there's a lot of stuff that does that. I mean, Octopath, the game we're going to talk about, the Tavern, looks incredible, is really beautiful, but it does have pixels and stuff. And it's interesting to see how, at the end of the day, the medium can communicate stuff. It doesn't have to just be this shiny new thing and only new moving forward.
That's you're right. That's a very cynical way to look at the games industry, where we always have to move forward. We can't look back and appreciate our history. Because I'll be honest, it's like, I think we did Morrowind for one of our pantheons, and I didn't like it that much, but I know that it's really important to game history, and I know that it has a lot of fans who like that, you know, that that pushback, that jank, and appreciate that for the history and what it did for games.
We like the mushrooms, the big mushrooms.
They like the mushrooms, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I remember
looking gnomes or whatever.
I remember last year at PAX West, I saw a kid with his parents, and the kid was wearing a Shovel Knight shirt. He's probably like 8 years old, but he's like a Shovel Knight fan. And I'm like, that's just, essentially, it's classic Mega Man.
Shovel Knight's like a 12-year-old game now at this point.
Yeah, it's, but people like latched
onto it. Kid might be younger than Shovel Knight.
It's basically just, you know, in terms of visuals, it's like classic Mega Man. And kids are latching onto it. Like, no, I think you're totally right.
Yeah, I don't know. Silly comment.
Very silly comment. Silly comment from a silly person. Stop being silly. Games industry, stop being silly. This is a very solemn message from Nadia.
Yeah.
And make my open world booster pack trading card game. Just give it to me now.
I agree. Eric, you're cooking with this one. I mean, what is more fun in FF14 than going around and beating the shit out of people at Triple Triad?
I keep my Final Fantasy sub. This is like a very damning omission, but I keep my Final Fantasy sub because some nights I don't want to play a game I have to think about. I want to log into Final Fantasy 14, find a Triple Triad NPC I haven't beat yet, and go play them in a card game until I win. And I will sit there and for like an hour just play Triple Triad and have like one piece on my other monitor, and I will like decompress, and is the best feeling in the world. Please, more of this, gaming industry.
We don't have to fight all the time. Sometimes we can chill and play cards. Well, that is it for the random encounters. Let us roll on into the tavern. I have something to talk about myself. I mentioned Distant Worlds, but Eric, you mentioned Octopath Zero. Why don't we talk about that first a little bit?
Yeah, I'm playing deeper into Octopath Zero. I think I'm getting near the end of the Master of All line of quests. I think at this point we're far enough removed from launch and stuff that like talking about the form of the game is not a faux pas. So obviously the game starts you with the kind of Master of Wealth, Master of Fame, Master of Power, I think.
Yeah, power.
Yeah.
And it does seem like that's going to be the game. I will tell you right now, that's kind of like act one.
That's what I've heard.
It kind of establishes general ideas of what the game eventually becomes. And so I'm starting to see the shape of like what the game is now. And it's very interesting. It's a very different vibe from what I would say Octopath Traveler 1 and 2 were. Because we talked about this a little bit, but having a singular character is one aspect that you are kind of building this party and gathering members over time. I think a lot of the characters that you run into are really fun. I ran into a fight that I was not prepared for, and that felt really, really cool, that it turned into this whole little side quest of trying to get through this thing and learning about this new character that I probably wouldn't have learned about if I hadn't just had a conversation on the side of the road. And I love that Octopath still finds ways to do that with its path actions, with its clever little gameplay mechanics that just like create interesting moments of role playing. And then also you have Wishvale back home. I love the town building stuff. It's really fun to do. But the other way that Octopath kind of changes because of that format is, if you remember in Octopath Traveler, let's say 2, there's a city or like a town for each character, right?
So
the way that zones kind of work is you have like centered zones where okay, this is around the level of where you might be if you're starting the game. And then the right. further out you go from them, they get harder and harder and harder. And then they condense back down because they'll start to get into the territory of, okay, well, this is where another character starts and we need to have it like condense back down. And so it was kind of a weird, when you think about like heat maps of where levels spike and decrease, it was kind of a weird way that you had to navigate around the world, and you'd almost have to like find your way around danger zones that you could eventually go into later once you were prepared and you were ready. And sometimes run into a thing where you're at a crossroads and you go up near an entrance and it's like, oh, this is a level 60 zone. It'll tell you before you enter. So I need to walk back. I can't go in there. Octopath Zero, because of the way it's just one character branching out from one zone and kind of you move south mostly as the game progresses. It is more of a linear progression in that way where you're just kind of seeing the levels go up as you go. But that does make it feel a little bit more interesting because you have reason to kind of just keep progressing forward. And there's kind of always this feeling of pushing the boundaries of your world outwards you start to explore more. And I think that's an interesting format for what this story does, for what this series is used to versus what it is in Octopath Zero. But I really like it. I think the combat's really fun. I'm starting to really get into the nuances of the mastery system, which adds a lot of flexibility to how you can build your party and skill people out. And I mean, Octopath is still just Octopath. It's maybe the best turn-based battle system out right now.
I agree. It's so fun.
It's a really enjoyable system to play around with, and they come up with really interesting ways to do cool moments in those games. If you want an example, you can go watch GDQ, where they did a speed run of Octopath 2, and they fight what I think is maybe one of the best bosses that the team has ever made, is that final boss of Casty's storyline.
Oh, which
is
such a cool fight.
So good.
Such a cool fight.
Brutal.
It's excellent. Yeah. It's so well done. I'm really excited to get to some of that stuff. But the story even in Octopath Zero is kind of giving me some Tactics vibes. It's weird. Kind of giving me the, like, we're getting into some real kingdoms at war, and what does war mean for the people who have to endure it, like for civilians, for people caught in the crossfire and stuff like that. It's getting into some stuff like that, and I'm really enjoying that. So Octopath Zero continues to be really good. I continue to pick away at it. I want to finish it at some point. I don't know when that is, but it's become my go-to game at this point. Whenever I just have like a spare hour or two, I'll kind of level a little bit, move along, advance some quest lines, all that. It's really, really good.
I might have to go back to it then, because like I said, I loved Octopath 2 and I bounced off the demo of Zero, but it might be that the first opening hours are the weakest and I need to go back, because I do love me some Octopath just for Yasunori Nishiki's soundtracks alone. I mean,
it's so good
for those alone. And I have listened to a lot of Champions of the Continent music before knowing Zero was a thing, and I know how good it is. So I might just have, is it particularly grindy, or do you feel like you can move on at a pretty good pace?
I do feel like I'm having to stop and do some leveling a little bit more often than I'm used to. But I do think that then benefits it if you're playing it on the Switch, because like sometimes you don't want to sit and play like a whole quest, or you don't want to get like a story beat started. You just want to play some Octopath, maybe find a side quest to poke away at. There's tons of side quests in this game. So there's always kind of something you can be doing to advance in some way. So and I think it's better about that than Octopath 1 and 2, where I think Octopath 1 and 2, you kind of got locked into, you have to do the different stories for each character and you'd have to bounce around to keep everybody's level up. And here it's more like there's a lot of side quests just littered everywhere and things to do littered everywhere that you can just always be chasing after.
I am definitely going back to it. I've always finished Octopath Traveler games, even though they're pretty hefty time investment, but they're always worth it.
Yeah,
and even when you have to grind, like the battle system goes so quickly that like a fight is over before you know
it. Speed it up.
How about you, Ash? I'm not even busy, but have you been doing anything you want to talk about? Reading, watching, playing, listening?
Well, like I said, I've been, you know, kind of mostly in caretaker mode with like my wife and my mom. So I haven't really been in the right mind space. I've been trying to work on Silent Hill F, but I'm like, you know what? I'm not in the best headspace right now anyway. I don't think that's really the right game for the moment. So yeah. I've kind of put that aside, and I've actually been going just full cozy mode. I've been doing a full replay of the classic Mega Man series. So that's been really fun.
Oh, beautiful.
So that's just obviously not RPG relevant, but that's been fun. I'm about to wrap up 10, looking forward to playing 11 again. As I did say before we started recording, I wasn't expecting it, but the demo of DQ7 Reimagined really got its hooks in me. And right. So I think I'm going to be there day one to play that. It's going to be a hefty experience for sure. But I'm still trying to fill in my gaps of DQ knowledge because I've only played 11 and 3 so far. So now 7 will be the next one. And other than that, that's really basically what I've been doing while kind of just trying to get my wife back on her feet. We just started watching Wonder Man, which has been really good. We're big MCU fans and we're actually not lapsed. Like, we've watched everything post Endgame. So we're still watching all the TV series, all the movies and everything, and we're still into it. And, but I would say even if you're lapsed and you're not like big on what the MCU is doing now, Wonder Man almost feels like it's not even an MCU. It's so different from everything else. Mm-hmm. So if you're kind of like, I don't know about the MCU, give Wonder Man a shot, because it's totally different in vibes from everything else they've ever done. At Mike versus the World, they know Wonder Man so good. It really is. It really is. So
it looks kind of fun.
It is a lot of fun. And so that's, I think, the majority of what we've been up to. And but yeah, DQ7, I think, is going to be my next big game that I sink my teeth into. And I'm hoping that if the partner showcase thing is real next week, that we get a release date for Adventures of Elliot, because I need that game now. I need it. I need it. That
very
demo.
Final Fantasy adventure. It's for the old people like us.
Absolutely. But
it's gonna be good.
Oh, I can't wait.
Team Asano does not miss.
I just wish the name was better. Adventures of Elliot
and I keep saying Millennial Tales instead of Millennium Tales.
I wish it was just the Millennium Tales or something. It's just Adventures of Elliot. But the game itself, I can't wait.
Yeah. Is that a Team Asano game? Or is it just 2D HD?
I think it's Team Asano.
I think it's Team Asano, yeah.
I think it is Team Asano. Yeah.
So yeah, that should be great. As for myself, as I mentioned earlier, I went to go see Distant Worlds in Toronto. It's a Final Fantasy concert.
Nice.
I got a ticket from Square Enix, so thank you very much. So Distant Worlds, I think this is like my third or fourth time. I never miss it. And the thing about this show is that it usually changes. There's usually a theme to it. Like, there was one year that was very Final Fantasy VI hefty. Like, they actually did the opera. And was so good.
I got to see
good.
That, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This particular show was very Final Fantasy 14/16 focused because Soken was there as a guest composer.
Oh,
actually.
Nice.
And that was pretty funny because the composer, Arnie Roth, has been doing this for like 20 years at this point.
Yeah.
He shines a spotlight on Soken, who's like not too far down from me, as it turns out. And so he's like, you know, guest composer, Soken. And everyone's like, yay. And I just like lost it. I'm like, yeah, you rock, Soken. You're amazing. I like kind of did the horns. And he like points at me like he does like, eh.
Nice.
So that was pretty fun. That was a great show overall. For 14 music, we heard Salt and Suffering, which is the map music for, is Alamigo? I know it's the last map in Shadowbringers, and it's one of my favorite parts of the game because that's when the game is getting into Shadowbringers, and it's so good story-wise.
Mm-hmm.
And that music is like really drives the point home that shit's going down with the Garland Empire. Ugh. We also heard, I can't remember her name, unfortunately, Amanda Achen, the singer for Final Fantasy 14. She was there.
Oh, cool.
And she sang Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which is the song that kind of wraps up Shadowbringers. And that song always kills me. I always cry at that.
Oh, yeah.
And she did Flow, which is the song that wraps up Endwalker. Not my favorite song. A lot of people love it, but whatever. It sounded great. Her last one was... Shoot, I can't remember. The last day, the fight with the end singer, I think.
Okay, cool.
Sorry, she didn't sing that, but she did sing Stars for Final Fantasy 16. And dear God, here's what I learned about Final Fantasy 16 while watching this show. Final Fantasy 16 is best experienced as a live music show where a live orchestra is playing while there is footage of the Bahamut fight in the background.
Oh, man, I ended up really enjoying 16, and the soundtrack was a big part of that, of course. Like, and I haven't heard anything from 16 live yet. I haven't.
Oh,
yeah.
you got to see the show rolls into your neighborhood because, it is excellent. Like, I have not played much of 16, But I have to say, they did a really smart thing by with the visuals by focusing on the boss fights. Because yeah. like they had like the they had Ascension, I think, was the one with was the Bahamut fight.
I believe so, yeah.
And also the first fight with Phoenix and Ifrit.
Yeah.
And it's just a really visually spectacular game. That's
16 has some pacing issues, but like it also has some of the highest highs of any video game I've ever played. It's yeah. those boss fights are crazy.
Ash Parrish actually responded to my tweet saying, like, if we ever had aliens come to Earth and justify video games, like, ask us to justify video games, like, you would show them that fight.
Oh, with, yeah.
The Bahamut. Damn, I love dragoons. Why are dragons so cool? But yeah, it always sounds great. The visuals are always great. It's always worth the money. I tried to get into the VIP room. I did not manage it. I just shot my shot because, you know, I have the charm. I can
trying to work your way back to the VIP area.
Yeah, I'm media. I'm
you
media.
Know, man, now I think
got,
of it.
I got pretty far, but at the end I was turned down.
Considering your love for Dragoons, you really do need to play 16 because the character who is who is Bahamut, the icon, the human, the character, yeah. Dion, he's like one of the best Dragoons in the whole series.
He really is. He's great.
He's not quite Kane. I know you love Kane. He's not quite Kane level, but I'd say he comes pretty close. So just for that reason alone, you got to play 16.
You wouldn't know this. Eric would know this. Astinian, is he kind of like, mood-wise, is he more of an Astinian or a Kane? Actually, they're both the same, what am I saying?
I would. Did you watch Game of Thrones?
I know a little bit about it.
Okay. I was going to say he's like very like Renly Baratheon coded in a lot of ways.
Oh, I think I know who that is. Yeah. So
I
know that 16 was very Game of Thrones inspired. Which
yeah. He's like somewhere between Renly Baratheon and was it the Viper? Pedro Pascal's character.
Yeah, the Viper.
Yeah, yeah.
Today, Pedro Pascal's so cool.
He's a little bit of like. You know, the prince who would be and, you know, deals with a lot of like the, you know, the weight of the crown and all that, but also like has flair, you know, he embodies the like part of the dragoon that's like, I'm going to hit the field and make a huge impact and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it fits Bahamut too, right? Like
yeah.
Bahamut is that guy. So
actually one thing I wanted to mention is that they played, a lot of Final Fantasy IX music as well.
Nice.
So they did Never Alone, and they did, I can't remember the name of the song that plays when Alexander kind of becomes Alexandria. And love that scene simply because the castle turns into Alexandria, which of course is the Esper from Final Fantasy VI, and it is a city.
Yeah.
And that is so cool. And these wings, and then Bahamut, who is like the king of the summons, he has this moment where he's just like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. And he starts to fly away, but he can't make it. He just gets overwhelmed. And to see Bahamut get overwhelmed is so cool. So, yeah.
Alexander's like one of the coolest summons.
Alexander's
in Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
We should do a side quest that's like tier 14? Ranking the summons. That'd be sick.
That'd be cool.
His
Not
raid
alone
14 is
by
incredible.
Itself, though. Oh, I love that. I love that track. So, maybe my favorite from FF9, which is a huge bar to clear.
Yeah. So, they played that. They didn't do any six, actually.
No
they,
six.
No six.
Wow.
But they did do the Four Fiends.
Oh, nice.
The one thing that disappointed me is that they didn't do the version in FF14 where they have the chanting and the lyrics by, what's his name, Hayden, who did the original like Flash video for in like 2000 and something. But that was great. Of course, they did One Winged Angel.
Of course, of
gotta
course.
Do One Winged Angel.
Man, now you gotta want to go play some Theater Rhythm, which is always true, but I gotta go play some Theater Rhythm later today.
That's another hit on the Switch. Right
I was gonna
there.
Say, that's another great Switch game, Theater Rhythm. All right, that is it for the Tavern. I guess it's up to me to take us home. Ash, you mentioned that, and I'm very sorry to hear this, that your mother got appendicitis.
Yes, and it was a pretty severe case. Thankfully, she's on the mend. She's okay now, but it was pretty rough for a while there.
Yeah. I mentioned also that I got appendicitis, and this was when I was 12, and it was like, I think it was on a Friday, because I was supposed to go to a friend's birthday party the next day, and I just woke up being like, oh, I really don't feel good. I think I'm constipated, because even by that point, I was having trouble with like constipation and whatnot as a kid. And my mom's like, this is why I need to exercise more, blah, 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 blah. But anyway, as the day went on, I started throwing up and it's like, oh, mom's like, oh, I don't think that's constipation. And then I just got sicker and sicker. And as I mentioned, that was the day that I had a parent-teacher interview. And my mom said, if you're still sick when I get back, you're going to the hospital. So I was still sick. We went to the hospital. And I don't even think I got, like, back then, they didn't give you CAT scans very often. Like, mm-hmm. I don't even know if my hospital, they must have had a CAT scan machine. But either way, they said, we are pretty sure that your appendix is infected and it's got to come out. And so it came out, and I stayed in the hospital for a couple of days. And I was pretty sore because I had, obviously, like, my abdomen cut open. And my mom set off on a quest to make me laugh specifically so it wouldn't hurt. So she did a routine that she had gotten from a friend who had watched this on America's Funniest Home Videos, Kids Ask Your Parents. So she took a tomato and cut a mouth in it. And said, it was like cherry tomato, cut a mouth in it because it was like from my dinner that day at the hospital. She's like, hello, I'm Tommy Tomato. I don't feel very good today. And she like squeezes it and the guts all come out.
Oh, geez.
And I'm laughing my ass off as my abdomen is just like, oh, dear God, Mom, you got to stop.
Nice.
So
I thought America's Funniest Home Videos was still running. They just do like YouTube clips now.
If they're smart, they're still running because that's all it is.
Yeah. If anything, they're suffering from having too much content at this point. I don't know if people still submit to it, but
they must. Yeah. I mean, it's still got that name power, I would assume.
America's Funniest Home Videos. I don't know if they're home videos anymore. That's the other question I would ask.
Anymore.
Yeah, does that count as a home video? Yeah.
I gotta say, like, there's a better class of like video fuck ups back in the day, where, like grandpa falling off the tree or whatever. Like, mm-hmm.
There's something to it. There's something about the quality, the graininess of like a camcorder from like the 90s.
Exactly.
And it's clearly like dad wants to, you know, catalog a family moment or whatever. And then, somebody like gets hit in the nuts by a baseball or whatever. Like,
Very, very YouTube 1.0. esque stuff. Star Wars kid era stuff.
Man, I miss that internet.
Me too.
That is it, I suppose. Unless Eric, do you have something else to say?
No, that's
all
it.
Right.
That's
that is it. I am done. I have hosted this episode. We have gotten through. Nothing's on fire. I have succeeded. Thank you so much to Ash for joining us. Ash, why don't you promote yourself?
Sure. Well, thank you so much for having me. It's always such a blast being here with you guys, so I'm down anytime. My name is Ash Paulson, of course. You can find me on Blue Sky at ash.gvg.io, Twitter at Ash Paulson. I don't use it quite as much anymore since the whole takeover. But speaking of GVG, that stands for Good Vibes Gaming, and that's where you can find me and my colleagues. Just check us out on YouTube, Patreon, Twitch. And we are basically the old Game Explain crew plus two new people brought back together under our own brand. So we just do lots of cool gaming content. You can find me there. I think I did a pretty good job on a Mega Man Dual Override trailer analysis. So if you're a Mega Man fan like me, check that out. But that's where you can find me. And we just talk about games. And if you follow me on social media, you'll find that I just talk about games and food and dogs. Pretty much my three favorite things. So, that's where you can find me.
All right. As for us, we are Acts of the Blood God. You can find us at patreon.com/bloodgodpod. If you subscribe, even for $1, you get access to a really cool Discord, which is full of really cool people. If you subscribe at the $5 level, you get a whole bunch more stuff, including Discord access. You get ad-free episodes of our show. You get my newsletter, which is really cool. And I think you should read it because it will give you longevity. Then there's a $25 level for the Stars of Destiny, and they get to join us for the show every week, which we will be coming back to Twitch. We swear to God. We swear to the God of Twitch, and we shouldn't swear to God because God loves to make men break their promises to him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know where we are. You know who we are. Please support us. We are independent. We are just trying to struggle. We are getting by, but we're having a good time, and I like to bring sunshine to you people. I do bring sunshine to myself, so... Thank you so much, and thank you for listening. And this is Axe of the Blood God, and we will see you next time. So take care and happy adventuring.
Aber was ich noch erzählen wollte, meine Nichte kämpft sich ja ganz schön das Studium. Semesterbeitrag, Laptop, Bücher, Software, Handy, Internet. Ey, so ein Master ist echt teuer.
Ach, sag ihr, sie kann sich das zurückholen.
Ja, du meinst von der Steuer absetzen, ne? Aber sie verdient ja nicht.
Egal. Zauberwort Verlustvortrag. Macht sie ganz einfach mit Wieso Steuer. Und wenn sie dann arbeitet, heißt es Katsching.
Das geht?
Safe. Wieso Steuer.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück.
Jetzt kostenlos ausprobieren.